$13,000 million. It's a lot of money to go to the rich out of your tax dollars that you worked so hard. Because 90% of all taxes come from people who make less than 20%, than $20,000. A face-saving deal for Carter, who last year called the USA tax system a disgrace to the human race, may already be in the works. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Russell Long said last week he hopes to fashion a tax bill the president can live with by getting a House Senate Conference Committee to make a few cosmetic changes in the legislation. Carter's congressional allies may well be able to present the president with a final bill that he would reluctantly sign, but it was too tough. It has not been satisfactory, and it didn't work out. In a related development that had more to do with the partisan Republican-Democratic policies than with liberal-conservative ideology, the House defeated the Kemp-Roth tax proposal, which is, in many ways, a federal version of California's Proposition 13. The bill, sponsored by Representative Jack Kemp, Congressman New York, and Senator William Roth, Republican Delaware, would slash federal income taxes by $31.9 billion in 1979 and $120.7 billion in 1981. Even though it's been temporarily stopped, they fear by next session there will be enough votes to bring about a universal federal Proposition 13. That will mean 40% of America's workforce, 40% of America's workforce will have no employment whatsoever. The benefits of this enormous windfall would be felt mostly, this new Proposition 13 for the entire federal government, would be felt mostly in the upper income brackets. Kemp-Roth has become a rallying point for conservatives, both Republican and Democrat, congressional candidates throughout the nation. And last week's 240 to 177 vote against it was seen as basically an attempt by Democrats to defuse the issue. The vote did in fact break down along party lines, with only 3 Republicans voting against the bill and 37 Democrats backing it. But they think the next session, the Proposition 13 federal law will indeed go through. Convicted murderer Antonio Provisano, formerly the top officer of a New Jersey Teamster local, has set up a defense fund to pay for the cost of his trial and appeal. Each of the 10,000 members of Local 560 are expected to contribute $10 or a day's sick pay, $72, to the fund. Tony has done so much for all of us in his 40 years of service to the trade union movement, said a letter to each local 560 members from Robert Luisi, a local 560 business agent. Provenzano has twice been convicted of embezzling union pension and benefit funds. The request was approved by the current local 560 leadership. Provenzano, 23-year-old daughter, succeeded him in his post, and 4 of his relatives are on the local payroll, according to PROB, a rank-and-file organization within the union. PROB demanded a Justice Department investigation of the local. And that's the kind of capitalistic bossism you have in such unions. There are no free trade unions in the United States. The Teamster Union here under the leadership of a big boss, and they still vote for him no matter what evidence there is that he's been corrupt and taking advantage. Ford Pinto again today. Prophet takes 13 more lives. In a car in Pennsylvania, they were driving along the freeway and they run into another car. It's due to the Ford Pinto's unsafe conditions. Last week, they were to check whether they had refastened the gas cap after stopping at a self-service station a few minutes earlier. The investigation proved that they had. Moments later, a van speeding along the five-lane highway struck the Pinto from behind. The Pinto's gas tank exploded on impact like one previously in Indiana. The windshield blew out and the car rocked to a halt 154 feet down the road. Not only were the people in the car, but in the truck were also caught up and consumed in the flames. 13 lives, while big business goes on and nobody will make them change the matter. The Ford Pinto has become a flaming coffin for hundreds of others, U.S. motorists and passengers, since 1975. The deaths of these people I just mentioned, these passengers in Pennsylvania, could have been avoided. 7 years ago, before the 2.5 million Pintos were introduced to the United States market engineers at Ford were aware that the car gas tank was susceptible to explosion upon impact. Yet Ford managers, big business, monopoly capitalist Ford managers, decided it would not be cost-effective to install nothing more than an $8 car safety modification. They first said it was $11. It means only $8 could have saved all these hundreds of lives that have been killed by Ford, big, giant, monopoly capitalist. But that's too much. They didn't want to lose that much profit. In opting to forego the safety design changes, Ford managers estimated that 1,800 people would die as a result every year, with another 180 suffering severe burns. The United States Department of Transportation dispatched investigators to Elkhart, Indiana, and to Pennsylvania also to impound the Pintos for an investigation. Six people have died of rear-end crashes involving Pintos since the first of this month. A month earlier, under heavy consumer pressure, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration ruled that the gas tanks in 1971, 1976 Pintos, and 1975, 1976 Mercury Bobcats, excluding station wagons, were prone to gas leaks and explosions and would cause death if they had impact with any other vehicle. It had become a flaming inferno. Ford reluctantly agreed that he would discuss the matter, but did not finalize any agreement to recall the cars and to install devices that would only cost him $11 per car to shield the gas tanks during collision. If the U.S. people did not realize how little regard there is for the working class of the poor, or for that matter, the middle class that buy the Ford Pinto, this should show them. But the giant car company still refuses to concede that there really is a safety problem. And Congress never makes laws to affect big business. They can kill 1,800 people in 1 year. 1,800 people 1 year. If you kill one, you'd go to the electric chair. It depends upon who you are. That's the whole issue. You're big business, you get by with murder. It seems like that Donald Reagan is dusting off the running gear, and according to the polls, the signs are unmistakable. Ronald Reagan is winning, and it is running for president. Written off by reason of age after he nearly took the Republican nomination away from then Gerald Ford, the ex-Californian in 76 governor, and he ex-governor, is today the commanding figure in a party whose internal machinery has virtually been taken over by the forces of the neo-fascist. It's based the platform on racism, separation of children in schools, separation of neighborhoods, where people cannot live in the same neighborhoods if they are black or Indian with whites. President Jimmy Carter's inability to stop the crisis in U.S. capitalism at home and abroad has made a Reagan nomination very, very likely and acceptable to the dominant sections of finance capital. The last stage, as we know, finance capital, before it goes into fascism and Nazism, at home and abroad, has made a Reagan nomination acceptable to all elements of the working class and the middle class. At the same time, Reagan has been trimming his political sails ever so deftly in order to shed his image as a right-wing neo-fascist extremist. A slight move towards the moderate center is necessary on two counts: to reassure the chieftains of monopoly capital that he would be a responsible chief executive, and to build a broad enough electoral base so that he can win not only the Republicans' nomination, but the election itself. And pollsters show that he is very likely to win the Republican nomination and undoubtedly could beat Carter, according to the polls right now. Racist Cleveland mayor, as you know, won a recall vote. Young white racist mayor Dennis Kucinich won because they knew how we are blind to religion, so he called a recall election. The city fathers did on Sunday, while all of our people were in on their knees or singing with their white gloves, marching up and down the aisles, singing the choirs, and thus, even though Cleveland had a majority of black citizens, they were not there because they were too busy in the house of the Lord. Typically stupid. Typically stupid. University of Maryland. University of Maryland, College Park, has turned down the appointment of Marxist political scientist Bertel Oilman to chair the Department of Government and Politics in an increasing wave of repression reminiscent of McCarthy era. John Toll, university president, withdrew the Oilman appointment on the 20th of August with the following statement: "I make a determination on the basis of my judgment of the qualifications for a particular appointment of the candidate who has been proposed. I wish to stress that in my opinion it would be improper and illegal to base any decision on a candidate's personal opinions. Political beliefs are religious convictions." Toll then refused to explain why Oilman was unqualified. He said, "Ask the Board of Regents." It is now policy across many states, including the Board of Education of Maryland and in California and in Ohio and Indiana, and I could name many more, where no Marxist can be hired. That wasn't even true of all the states during the McCarthy era. Well, that's pretty much the terrible news, I'd say. Cancer-causing chemicals are abundant in all U.S. drinking water. Carcinogens, cancer-causing agents. The rusty cans and the rotted drums have seeped to the surface, turning a chemical graveyard into a health lethal nightmare. As a result, the New York State Health Department recently ordered all pregnant women and young children to abandon their homes in Love Canal neighborhood, the site of the chemical dump in Niagara Falls, New York. They said that many cities of the major cities of USA also have these dangerous cancer-causing agents. Proven carcinogens have oozed into backyards of many cities and infested the water, the pipe water, right through the water that they draw for their drinking purposes. Recent tests show that some 182 chemicals dumped in accordance with existing U.S. government regulations between 1930 and 53 now permeate most of the waterways and canals of every big U.S. city. That's nice. Get cancer now from drinking water. Wasn't bad enough to get cancer from eating the chicken with the sodium nitrate. Now you're going to get it from drinking water. Well, I guess that is sufficient for you to digest. and read the news closely, because it will be a test. Be prepared tonight. We may have a film, and I think we possibly will have a film that you need to study with some closeness. We will announce it a little bit later. Thank you and much love. I want us to see the Volga, a beautiful picture of the Soviet Union, one of its great rivers, and how they have beautiful life on the Volga. I want that to be seen by everyone tonight. It's very short, just an hour. And then, if those that would have been courteous, I'd like for you to listen and see the Russian films following. All young people should have looked at the Cuban sports events of last night, because they show how they use sports for revolution building. They said, when one asked, why don't you fight the USA contender? He said, I'd rather have the goodwill of 8 million Cubans who doesn't approve of brutality in boxing than $1 million. We don't need money. We don't worship money like USA does. So we will have those films. I want all of you to become very firmly acquainted with Russian films, Russian history, and you know why. Those days of peace in USA between the races and even people of their own neighborhood are over. In rural areas as well as in cities, said the New York Times editorial, the doors do not stay unlocked, even for part of an evening, not even during the daytime. Suburbs and country areas are in many ways even more vulnerable than well-patrolled urban streets. Some recent police statistics show the crime rate has risen so dramatically in this year that they can't even calculate it. It may be it has raised 5 to 6 times. In those already allegedly tranquil areas, that's how much of an increase they've had. At any rate, the era of leaving the front door for the latch or the latch open is over, no matter where you live in USA. It has been replaced by deadbolt locks and security chains and a electronic alarm system and trip wires hooked up to the local police station or a private guard firm. Many suburban families, says the Times reporter, I know, have sliding glass doors on their patios with steel bars elegantly built in so no one can pry these sliding doors. In a poll taken in Buffalo, New York, there was not a person that was interviewed that had not either been attempted rape on them, or theft, or break-in of their houses, or arson. So that's pretty bad news when a nation deteriorates that bad. The lock, said the New York Times, is a new symbol of USA. Indeed, a recent public service advertisement by a large insurance company featured not actual charts, but a picture of a child's bicycle with the now usual padlock attached to it. The ad pointed out that yes, it is the insurance companies that pay for stolen goods, but who is going to pay for what the new atmosphere of distrust and fear is doing in our U.S. way of life? Who is going to make the psychic payment for the transformation of America from the land of the free to the land of a fascist lock? For that is what has happened, said the Times. We have become so used to defending ourselves against the new atmosphere of American life, so used to putting up barriers, that we have not had time to think about what it may mean. For some reason, we are satisfied when we think we are well protected. It does not occur to us to ask ourselves, why has this happened? Why are we having to barricade ourselves against our own neighbors of the same color and fellow citizens? And when exactly did this start to take over? It has taken over. if you work for a medium to large size company, you don't just wander in and out. You now have to carry some kind of access card, electronic or otherwise, that allows you in and out of your place of work, because security guards do not recognize your face. In the apathy and disinterest and lack of love in U.S. society, no one recognizes anyone. You're just a face without a personality. And this is going to increase. The fact remains that the business you work for feels threatened enough to keep outsiders away via these modern keys. It wasn't always like this. Even 10 years ago, most private businesses had a policy of free access. It simply didn't occur to managers that the proper thing to do was to distrust people. Certainly there were people out there who might have harm in mind, but they were the exception, the norm, the people it was assumed would be coming in the building were presumed to be all right, but no longer. All of this is being done in the name of security. That is what we tell ourselves. We are fearful, and we devise ways to lock the fear out. And that, we decide, is what security means. That's why this writer of the New York Times feels that we are ready for a dictator who will guarantee our security with troops in our streets, and that people would sell out to fascism rather than to be afraid in the night in their sleep. But with all this security, we are perhaps the most insecure nation in the history of civilized mankind. What better word to describe the way in which we have been forced to live? What better indictment of all that we have become in this new and puzzling time?